welcome to Procedurally Generated. I'm Henry Bell, and joining me in studio today are Max Hamilton and Tom Schreier. Happy Thanksgiving, guys. We're going to have a little bit less news this week just because we had to record the podcast on Tuesday instead of Thursday, just because we're all going to be out of town, of course, with our families for Thanksgiving. And, of course, getting awesome deals on Cyber Monday because we're smart.
Tom Smart knew that.
Good for you, Tom. So proud. Let's just jump right into it because there's a story I actually want to talk about because we discussed this at length. It's kind of an update on a story we talked about earlier. You guys may remember one of my first episodes. We were talking about the Heroes of the Dorm tournament that was aired on ESPN2. It was a Heroes of the Storm, the MOBA tournament for college students, and the winner got a scholarship, or the winning team got scholarships. And it was there were over 100,000 people who wrote in to complain. Colin Cowherd was a total dick about it. I mean, seriously, like he was just being a total prick. He was saying things like these kids need to just get locked in their mom's basements and we can throw away the key, or like I'll shoot myself before I cover any of this stuff. I'm paraphrasing here, Basically just being the worst, just the worst kind of bully. And he since then is no longer with ESPN. Now he's with Fox Sports, I believe.
Yeah, Fox Sports One.
So obviously people care a lot less what he has to say now.
And not to take a jab, but yeah, it's taken a big hit. Like he had Trump on his show and like 8,000 people listened.
It's hilarious. I saw actually a Facebook post about this today, and almost all the comments were, he doesn't work for, like, that scrub doesn't work for ESPN anymore. Like, I only clicked on this article because it said he was still with ESPN. I wouldn't give a damn if he was with Fox Sports. It's kind of hilarious. And so Mark Cuban has come out and against Colin Cowherd. It's actually kind of interesting. You guys might know him from Shark Tank probably. But he's just like he also owns
the Dallas Mavericks.
The Dallas NBA Mavericks. Team. Yes. Oh, good. Thank you. I was going to guess NFL.
Yeah, NBA
team. But he also played a kind of sort of celebrity show match at the ESL this year, which is really interesting. He played a game of League of Legends against the CEO of, I think it was Dell or something like that. But what was so interesting was he was interviewed after it and asked, you know, what he thought about the game. And he talked about how Colin Cowherd didn't know his ass from his end, basically, and how he was in the wrong. And it was really funny, too, because the person interviewing him is Colin Cowherd's partner, on his Fox show now.
Oh, really?
It's hard to describe her role. Like, she's almost kind of like a producer, but I don't even know if she works the board. Yeah.
Tell she enjoyed some of that slight that was getting thrown his way, though. She did not stop.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember her name offhand. I'm sure it's in the article. But she holds her own. She's kind of a foil to Cowherd a little bit. And calls him out because he does some of the things he says are interesting. A lot of it is kind of some BS and to get people riled up or whatever. So
which we're aware of, but you still have to be careful, you know, who you target because people remember and it can have an effect on your career.
And the direction I was going with this is why it matters that it's Mark Cuban is, first of all, he made all his money in software, I believe, or that's at least how he got started.
Sure.
And kind of got in this position where he could be on Shark Tank. He has a lot of money and obviously owns Dallas Mavericks. I think he tried to buy the Cubs or something like that. And he's the kind of guy, a lot of these owners, like here in Minnesota, Glenn Taylor sits with his wife, you know, courtside or whatever. A lot of these people go up in the box or whatever. When we were at the Vikings Rams game, the Rams owner actually blocked off the media when he was using the bathroom. So the one bathroom everyone has, he had security.
Classy
there.
Guy.
Yeah. It was a very kind of like weirdly famous moment, but
I was escorted out by his security staff. Never wash this hand again.
well, me being weird, like me being an idiot, I went up and I grabbed, there's some water there. And then I was like, hey, I just need to use the bathroom. And they're like, nope. And I was like, Tom, maybe when there's security in front of the bathroom, you can't use it. But no, either way, I think the thing with him too is that Cuban has called out other people on ESPN, like the First Take guys who, Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless, you know,
nice to have it coming from someone though who's speaking from a position of authority, like, because he is a team owner, which is like relevant, absolutely, to Colin in particular.
Well, yeah, and he wasn't afraid to go on their show when the Mavericks beat the Heat when LeBron was there his first year, and he went on and he was like, you guys rip LeBron all the time. This is, and I'm not going to go down this path too far, but he was basically like, look, you have to give our defense some credit and stuff like that. He's willing to make a good argument, and so I think this is, again, him just kind of calling out some BS and being like, look, if you're a TV channel, you need to get ratings. Right now, like, ESPN laid off 300 people, plus they're losing all this talent, like a Cowherd and Bill Simmons and some of the other people. ESPN really should be showing these games that are very popular.
I wonder where a lot of those audiences are going to. If you watched the video of Mark Cuban, like, giving this interview, he's in a packed stadium. I mean, ESL is not a small event. In fact, it beats out most sporting events just for physical attendance, and that's not talking about virtual tickets sold.
Well, we talked about this a while back when SI did an article on them, and they had like 10,000 people in Madison Square Garden, plus however many more watching. Yeah. And the other thing about this is it's an international event. You know, like, we care here about the World Series and stuff like that. This is obviously something on a grander stage.
Yeah, this is international. This is soccer level of viewership. Also, as a side note, it was Intel's CEO, not Dell's. I misspoke earlier, who he played the show match against. But it was really interesting, too. He mentioned he hinted that he may have an interest in purchasing one of the professional League of Legends teams. He said, wait and see. But very knowingly, it was pretty clear that he's interested, at least, in making a purchase.
And why it's a good purchase is every advertiser is looking to the 18 to 35 demo, and they tend to go through sports, right?
Yep.
Which Cuban knows more than anything, owning a basketball team. Why some of these other, and I can't remember the team, it was like a StarCraft team, I think, or whatever, SI followed. The reason why those kids make so much money in sponsorship is because they reach someone who's not in the sports demographic.
Yep.
And ironically, with all this, Mark Cuban, again, he's a polarizing figure, but he's going to reach sports fans, many of whom, or some of whom at least, take him pretty seriously. It's, again, because he's a guy in a t-shirt who watches his team as though he's a fan, and hopefully bring them over to esports. And I think that's big for a lot of these cable companies.
Well, and I think it's big, too, to see when large businessmen, I mean, obviously, this is almost a bad example, but you guys remember the guy who jacked up the prices of that drug? It was in all the headlines recently. It was, I think it's an AIDS drug.
Yeah.
And he actually owns a league team and a Dota 2 team, pro teams. And so I think it's important to see that these like hedge fund kids and professional sports team owners are equally see the lucrative nature of esports. Like, there is money there that's just waiting to be grabbed.
And sorry, the point I wanted to make with the owners is I referenced this earlier, but he's in a t-shirt watching the team almost like a fan. And I think that gives him some credibility. The fact that he kind of came down here, said, hey, look, I'm a noob and just enjoyed playing the game.
Yeah.
I think that helps him out, too. Here's the thing. Cable's going to need properties like this. The most valuable things are sports for them. And they put themselves in a bind, being like, you know, these sports cost more and more and people are cutting the cord. So, you know, non-sports fans basically don't have cable anymore.
Yeah, well, there's one cadre left that does, and it's like wrestling fans who are often gamers anyways.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting because most of the people I know who do have cable that are our age only have it for WrestleMania and stuff like that. It's only for like specifically stuff that like sports that only air on cable, like niche sports in particular.
Yeah, but even like someone like me, I have it because I want to watch the Twins and Wolves and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and that.
Well, but the point being, you are someone who I would expect to have cable because you're a sports fan.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't expect the average gamer to invest in cable because gamers are a lot of the cord cutters.
And I think that's exactly it. And I think if you put that on there, I think the goal is A, to get those gamers to get cable again, but also for someone who maybe if their team's not playing that night to check it out, because if anything, Mark Cuban brings publicity to things. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And so, for someone like me who likes Blizzard properties, who hasn't played Heroes of the Storm, I might just watch it just because like I'm interested in the game and I might be like, you know what? I'd like to see it played before I make a purchase or something.
Sure. Well, and it's worth noting that a lot of the esports games that are broadcast, you'll never be anywhere near the level that they're showing. And there are games that I watch regularly. Like I watch Counter-Strike Go tournaments and StarCraft II tournaments. I don't even play those games. I haven't had StarCraft II installed for years, but I've been watching it since my first year of college because it's just a great game to watch. And so I think having quality experienced announcers and stuff that are able to get someone who doesn't play the game into the experience is important. I think it's great. Once that happens, I think that it's going to make this very accessible, much more than a lot of people are worried that it is now.
And why I think cable companies will be comfortable with this is, was it Amazon bought Twitch or what? Which company just bought Twitch? I can't remember.
It was Google who bought Twitch, wasn't
okay.
it?
Okay, yeah, that might be right. And so whatever it was a major purchase, and people have found out people like watching video games. I think when you sometimes see it in the internet space, a cable company goes, well, okay, if this worked for this company, clearly, you know, if I'm ESPN or CBS or...
You're right. I'm sorry. I think Google offered for money for Twitch, but it was Amazon who actually got the purchase.
Yeah, so, you know, when you see a big company like Amazon... do something like this. I think, you know, the irony in all this is Fox Sports 1, which is trying to compete with ESPN,
right,
maybe would like to have this property because they, you know, basketball's Turner and ESPN, like $1 billion, 9-year, $24 billion
right.
contract. NFL split up between NBC and ESPN and Fox and basically all over. But, you know, some of these other ones like baseball, TBS, TNT, and Fox split up the World Series and the playoffs there. You know, Fox Sports 1 had some of those games, but it might be nice to have, again, this overwhelming audience that again might get cable again if the product they like is on cable. I mean, yeah. That's pretty simple.
Sure. Max, what do you think about all this? You've been ridiculously silent.
Yeah, you know, I don't understand. Well, I guess I understand the appeal of esports, but it's never been my thing. I can't stand watching other people watch.
When you, now, that's a pretty games. Broad brush to paint. I mean, there's a lot of variety in different
I just,
esports.
Regardless,
like, have
of,
you given all of them the time of day, or did
even
you watch,
on
like
Twitch? I just, you know.
Well, Twitch is. I don't watch Twitch.
Oh no,
Twitch
I know.
Twitch is less
I'm saying
appealing
I've,
than an esport.
No, I understand that. I've watched some League of Legends. I've watched some Hearthstone. I've watched some. Rocket League, and those are all games. Well, not League, but the
I
other
would say
two.
League is really the only one of those that's an actual competitive esport. Hearthstone,
well, League,
is just
League of Legends.
Hearthstone, yes.
Right.
Didn't you say that?
Yeah.
He said League. That's okay. What League is.
Oh, but, I thought you were saying Rocket League. Sorry.
No, I apologize. That's my bad. No, I guess, League is a common nickname for League.
Gotcha. MOBAs do not appeal to me, and watching them doubly so. But
sure.
I suppose,
what about like StarCraft 2 though, or you know, like
I never played
Counter Strike Go. So what?
Own Counter Strike just doesn't do it for me.
Okay. Well, owning it is really neither here nor there. Like I was saying.
Oh, I just I don't enjoy it, just period across the board. Whether it's an e-sport, whether it's on Twitch or friends playing games, I just don't enjoy watching people play video games.
Sounds like you haven't given it a chance. Sounds like you made up your mind before you even checked it out.
It's been around for
a
while.
I never even liked watching video games
it just doesn't do it for me.
Fair enough.
The other thing with these cable companies is they're always looking for daytime programming. Most of that, it revolves around people. They should find, I mean, these teams probably have intriguing stories. We talked about those kids who are 17 and went off to, you know, learn how to play League of Legends or, you know, here's a storm at a high level. This is another way for them to find programming and kind of find that audience that might not be interested in it.
That's true, although I would very much hesitate to aim any daytime programming at gamers. I think most gamers are much more active when the sun goes down.
True, or whatever. I guess non-peak hours. Maybe you could even
I'm just joking. Yeah. I know what you're saying. That makes total sense. All right. Well, I mean, that's pretty much all we got on this one. But good news overall. It's just another good move for an inevitable industry that's forming. And whether or not you want to call it a sport, an e-sport, a game that's being broadcast and covered, the audience is there. So get used to it because it's not going anywhere. However, you know what is going somewhere? Afro Samurai 2.
Where's it going?
Well, to non-existent land. they've pulled it off Steam and they're offering full refunds to everyone who purchased the game. Interestingly, this is almost the opposite of the Arkham Knight issue that WB faced earlier this year. Rather than a game being pulled because it's full of game-breaking bugs or runs really poorly or is not finished or anything like that, this game was just a steaming pile of garbage. I mean, unbelievably bad. I didn't play it myself, but I read a bunch of reviews and watched several like quick looks and stuff of the first 25 minutes, and it's so bad. There's no backgrounds. It looks like it's a PlayStation 2 game. The cutscenes are all storyboards, black and white storyboards.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It's not even clear what's happening or what the rules of the game are. I mean, it's crazy. It
sounds like quite the trip.
It's garbage.
How much was it retailing for? I believe like what, $20 or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, I think it was episodic, so yeah, oh, I think it was right. 20, and they were going to release two other episodes, yep. But they have now canceled the next two episodes, and it's kind of sad actually. I want to get the exact quote that the developers used. They said the game was a failure. We could not do In Good Conscience Volume 2 and Volume 3. So we've begun the process. It's been a long process to figure it out because Sony has never really had to do it in this way, but we're turning all the money. So across the board, we're putting out an apology and saying, sorry about this. He added that they didn't perceive any game-breaking bugs or issues, which meaning that did not contribute to people's dislike of the game. I think this has a 2 on Metacritic or a 3.
Yeah, it was not impressive at all.
I mean, I'm actually shocked because usually anything that runs nowadays, it seems like most of the reasons that things get pulled or that there's massive backlash to a game is because of like bugs and issues with lack of development time or stuff like that. But this appears to be such a low quality product that while they're technically not required to give refunds, I have to wonder if Sony asked them to because it's about their brand. Because this was a Sony licensed game.
That's true.
So, I mean, it's very, very interesting. Honestly, I can't help but smirk about it because I'm just a jerk like that. But I love seeing any company have to eat their product like this.
I'll use this, example. Like, I was excited for the new Tony Hawk until I realized it looked like a PlayStation game, right? And I was kind of like, that's disappointing. I liked playing that game as a kid. Their, CEO or whoever, general manager didn't come out and say this game was a failure. We're pulling it off the shelves. At the very least, this company realized when it was a loss. It was a loss, and right. He didn't try to weasel around it or anything.
Actually, now that I think about it, I wonder if I was giving them too much credit, I think. I bet I know the actual reason that they're pulling this and they canceled the other two. I bet you sales were so low for this that they can't justify developing and releasing two more episodes of it.
Sure.
I bet you that the sales were abysmal because this game didn't even get word of mouth. I didn't came out.
The first game was not terribly well received, although it was playable from most accounts. This was not a game that people were asking for.
Yeah, well, it's weird too because unless I'm not super up to date on my Cartoon Network, but Afro Samurai doesn't have like a new season out right now, does it? Is there like was this tied in with something,
I'm
or
is
this just like a 7 years too series. Late? Like this just seems odd. I've seen all of the original episodes and the movie and. This was, I mean, as far as I know, this is just like, hey, remember Afro Samurai? I think we have that license. Like, let's make a game of it. Probably make some money.
Just give us another Korra game. Or hold out till Shadow Warrior 2 comes out.
It's just interesting because it feels like a fighting game developed by someone who's only ever made like racing games or something like that. It feels like they have the very bare minimum. It looks like it plays like a terrible version of Prince of Persia with no climbing.
They're trying new things.
Yeah, something like that. Like no cutscenes. It's a visual choice. But yeah, that's pretty much all there is to say about Afro Samurai 2 being pulled. Just kind of funny and just another win for consumers over developers who are kind of grabbing for money a lot this year, which has been a little bit frustrating. Speaking of money grabs, Samsung's Gear VR has now launched at a $100, well, $99 price point. Anyone who owns a Galaxy Note 5, Galaxy S6, Galaxy S6 Edge, or Galaxy S6 Edge Plus can go ahead and go out and pick one of these up. And it lets you play a limited selection of games. I haven't heard anything in particular about any given game. However, it's going to allow you to do low level VR stuff using your phone. You can also have, as they put it, a movie theater viewing experience. I'm not sure what exactly that's supposed to mean, but you can put on blinders and watch a movie too. I don't know if they're going to pull like the Xbox, the old Xbox, you're sitting in a theater with your avatar thing or something to make it like a movie theater, which I have to assume they would be. What I think the potential is for the movie theater stuff, to be honest, is how cool would it be if you could call your buddy out of town, like in the old Xbox one, you could both sit in the audience together and then mic, you could talk about what's happening in the movie at the same time.
That'd be pretty cool.
Watch a movie with a friend somewhere else. That I think would be neat, and I'd be willing.
It's very good for long distance relationships,
yeah,
I bet.
Yeah, totally, exactly. You can Netflix and chill. But yeah, I mean, frankly, I'm not super interested because this is phone level and I have an iPhone from.
But with Oculus being involved, it clearly looks like they're testing the waters to kind of get a feel for the market and see what they can do with the real big show coming later.
I think that was honestly, I think that might have been kind of a mistake. I think that they should because this is not going to break sales records or anything. People are not going to be rushing out on Black Friday.
It is sold out everywhere right now. Apparently.
Sure. But I'm just, so is every thing that releases in November. What I mean to say is this is not going to kick off the VR revolution. When the Oculus Rift or the, whatever the Morpheus turned into PlayStation VR, when that stuff comes out, that's going to be the stuff that makes it a household discussion thing.
Right.
And I think maybe you're right. Maybe these early adopters will foster enough sales, but I see this as like an Apple Watch type thing where it sells huge on the first like month and a half. And then the second a better product comes out or the second people get wind that it's not the best product on the market, sales just dive.
Right.
I don't see until they get a killer app. I don't see all of the kids rushing out to get this. And also I think that I do think it's a mistake that it's so incredibly limited as to what phones you can use.
Right. But clearly for something like that, you need to cater to the device you're going
to
be playing.
You don't need to cater to the brand, though. I mean, for God's sakes, could it at least be any Android device that meets certain system specs? I mean, I understand that as an iPhone user, I wasn't going to get it. And I'm sure the dimensions of the phone are relevant as well. But come on, guys. I mean, just for people who have the Galaxy S phones and the Note 5, like that just seems a little bit...
Wonder how much money they got for it.
I'm sure plenty. I mean, but I'm also sure that this is all like a lot of this was paid for ahead of time. Like I'm sure this was a big investor thing. And the fact that they were the first to market, I'm sure is going to have a fair effect on their initial sales at least. Are you guys like raring to go buy a new phone so that you can use one of these? Or?
No, honestly, the mobile stuff, I didn't understand the appeal of it when we know what's on the horizon.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of with you on that as well. I think I want power from it. What I think if you were going to do something that is like this, let me stream over Wi-Fi from another device and use that thing's power.
Right.
Don't make me use my phone, which I think it'd be interesting to find out. Can you even make it through like a 2.5 hour movie without needing to plug it in or charge it?
Or just get bored of it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true as well, although I imagine that would be based on the movie more.
Possibly.
Unless you're just, oh, man. Because, I mean, it's not like they're going to put you in the movie. There are movies for VR. It's just watching a movie really close to your eyeballs, as I understand. It seems weird to me and not super appealing. I'll be interested, too, to see. I haven't gotten to wear any of these headsets yet, and I don't think either of you guys have either.
No.
I'll be very interested to see if – I don't know about you guys. I get a very weird sensation when I watch the 3D movies. Like right on the bridge of my nose, I get like a weird tingling sensation I really don't enjoy, and my eyes kind of hurt after too long wearing the glasses. So I'll be very interested to see if that is an issue with these, because I know not everyone has that problem, but I've actually had some movies that I've had to just leave because I cannot, my eyes are watering while I'm trying to watch it. So
sure.
I really hope that like the whole, I think part of it is just that I'm a giant wuss and I've never worn glasses and having like regularly and having something so close to my face that I can focus on, like my eyes are dumb and like won't look past it properly. But then again, I'm sure there are other people who have a similar issue. And I think that that's a fun way to put it. I'm sure there's something more to it than that. But I don't know. I'm really nervous about VR because I really want it to work, and I've seen some really cool applications of it. I was checking out a Let's Play of a game in development by the Node production guys on YouTube. They do a bunch of – they're with Corridor Digital, and they've done some work with Rocket Jump and them. And they have a game in development called Hover Junkers where you're – it's a first-person shooter where you're on a floating, like, platform out in the desert and you steer – it's like a junk ship basically. And you, like – there's all different ships and they have cover about up to shoulder height, just random junk stacked around the sides. And you fly the ship up to your opponents who are also in their ships and you shoot, like – and actually duck behind the cover of the ship. You can walk around the ship if you have a big enough one.
Okay.
And the whole – you're, like, point – you're actually ducking behind the cover and you have – they have the dual – they're using – I'm not exactly sure what the hand it looks kind of like the PlayStation Move. Actually, what it really looks like is like a flight stick controller.
Okay. That's not attached
with
to
no
anything.
Base. Yeah.
Okay.
But the articulation looks really good. The movement looks human even when you're watching just video of them, like of the gameplay. And the coolest thing was that it was supported full multiplayer,
which
I thought was awesome. Like they were in different rooms of the build of the, right. their recording studio. So I don't know. I think there's going to be really cool potential for VR, and I really hope that this blows up, because I think that we've been promised this for a very long time, and this could be our hoverboards.
Well, now Lexus has a hoverboard for you.
Yeah, I want a real hoverboard, not one that requires metal underneath the ground.
Nah.
So
I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyways, though, that's why I won't take what I can get, which is why I'm not going to be purchasing the Gear VR. So that's pretty much it for news, although we did want to touch on a very interesting study that came out this week. And actually, I'm going to throw this over to Tom because he's the most familiar with this.
Yeah, so I was just kind of reading through, not even looking for video game stuff, and I found this on Slate Magazine, basically a study that found that video games can teach your brain to fight depression. The easiest way to explain it is basically if you learn kind of, you know, problem solving in video games, you can almost approach, I mean, this is again what the study, or at least the article, kind of framed it this way, that you can kind of attack life's problems in a similar way. And it was nice to just read something. At the very least, it was nice to read something that it wasn't, you know, video games cause you to be violent, or video games cause you to be antisocial, or whatever these kind of studies that come out every once in a while and ruffle everyone's feathers. You know, this is kind of fun. It's a different way of thinking about kind of the, you know, reading the article, how, you know, play and all that stuff works, which is interesting.
Definitely. And I really want to highlight, they have their thesis is the opposite of play isn't work, it's depression, which I think is a really good way to put it, because a lot of, you know, another way is idle hands or the devil's plaything. You know, people have always said keep busy and all that. And gaming is a not super productive, but healthy way still to keep busy without having to be working all the time. And not everyone has hobbies that are super mentally intensive, but gaming gives you that break. Like I've even noticed game to game, this can be a thing where it's like games that you're not super involved in that are more hands off are generally, in my opinion, less fun than, and less, obviously less engaging, but just less, there's less of a drive. You're less invested in games that are more hands off. And I think that the feelings that you can, like the adrenaline rush you can get from playing a game, is on par with what you get from like winning in a sport. Like, honestly, as someone who played high school football and also like plays games regularly since high school, the only thing that gets me literally screaming excited is a clutch, you know, victory, like in Overwatch, like I had over the weekend, which we'll talk more about later. But I think it's really important for people to think about this, because I know a lot of people who have a lot of hobbies that don't really let them win, that aren't like, if your hobby is more work than your job, then I wonder at the actual benefit of said hobby are outside of your personal enjoyment.
Sure. Or if you're actually personally enjoying it.
Right. Well, and it's also, I think it's also relevant too. This is not directly from this article, but this is just kind of a connection that I see with another study that came out about a year ago talking about how older people who play video games later in their life have better brain elasticity and memory and hand-eye coordination to a later age. And it's literally the longer they play, the longer all of that lasts. And that part of that is just having an active lifestyle. It's like kind of how they say when you retire earlier, you basically can start having the debilitating effects of old age hit you at a younger age. And it's a big part of it is because you've stopped using your brain, basically. You're not actively problem solving and thinking critically and stuff like that on a daily basis for like a job under pressure and stuff. And gaming gives you that impetus, even if it's just something as simple as, honestly, I hate to say it, but playing Candy Crush, because you are reasoning.
Can we get that in writing, Henry?
No.
Can we quote you on that later?
If you quote me on it, I'll deny that I said it.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, like, even with Tomb Raider, you said you liked that the puzzles were harder in the next one. Like, obviously, if that was work, you wouldn't say that. And, you think of these guys like playing League of Legends and stuff, and I realize that, you know, becomes more like a job or whatever. But the joy of that is how complicated the game is, and I'm sure it's how frustrating it is right. at times too.
Well, and when you're a professional League of Legends player, it may not be as fun for you anymore, and you may not get all the same benefits. But the same could be said about a professional athlete.
You just don't know.
I'm sure that there definitely comes a point where quarterbacks get tired of throwing a football
or getting hit by a 300-pound person.
Right. Yeah. Wide receivers start to be just afraid of anyone who's overweight.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly.
And so I think this is a cool article. I agree. I think it's nice every once in a while to cover something. I know this wasn't huge news, but I think it's nice to cover something that shows video games in a possibly positive light, because there's so many alarmist articles from like these ardent mothers and worried fathers and stuff who are convinced that video games are making you violent or are making you antisocial or depressed, when we all know that the reality is actually more or less the exact opposite. Outside of some studies that have shown increases in aggression but not violence, really almost everything we've seen from video games is more or less a positive output outside of the whole, you know, sitting on your butt thing.
So game on.
Yeah, game on. Although I don't want to say that too soon, because we still have a couple more things I wanted to touch on today. Really quickly, this is just a game that Max linked us, and I just wanted to touch on it because I think it's worth highlighting. It's called, oh goodness,
12 is better than 6.
Yeah, sorry, it's kind of a hard to remember
to
name.
Quote the Kotaku article, a top-down shooter in the same vein as Hotline Miami, and oh, is it in the same vein as Hotline Miami?
Yes, very much so. Top-down, one-hit kills you, very intense stealth-based action.
And we neglected, it is a Western, so...
oh, yeah.
that's the important part. It has cowboys. But it's kind of like you said earlier, Henry, a notebooky feel, hand-drawn. It is black and white. The blood's in red. There's different weapons,
or it's kind
melee
of, it's,
and
it's,
guns.
It's ink. No, it's not black. It's bluish-purple,
right. Yeah.
Which I love. I actually think is a nice... I think stark black and whites would make my eye more tired.
It looks like sketch drawings.
Yes, it looks like somebody drew it in a college rule notebook.
And it's cool because all you see of your character and of the enemies, other than like the occasional hand or leg or weapon, is the top-down view of a sombrero or a Western cowboy hat. And as you navigate the world, you're just kind of encountering all these people. And are they friend or foe? Will they attack? There's animals small buildings to explore.
I said definitely a sombrero, just as a side note.
Oh, what did I say?
Oh, you just were saying you weren't sure if it was a sombrero or a...
Oh, no, I meant, like, your character's wearing a sombrero, but I mean...
Oh,
other,
sure, yeah.
The enemies have
well, the other
varying
characters
hats
are actually
and
pretty,
like that,
they're so. Actually look fairly diverse, too, because unlike Hotline Miami, there's more detail to the characters.
Yeah, this is not a pixelated game by any means, kind of like Hotline Miami was with some of the weapons and characters, and it didn't get very detailed. This is very intricate, I would say.
Yeah, and the art direction is really fantastic. Beyond what we've already mentioned, like the blood effect being red is cool, but what's really cool is how the blood spatters based on like how you shoot them and stuff like that. Like it looks really good. And also like you can, it's little stuff like in this indie game, you can track blood around the floor if you step in it for a little while and stuff like that. I think your character just randomly spits and stuff like that. It's just, it's atmospheric.
A real cowboy.
It feels like it. Yeah. Although I can't decide if, I'm not sure yet. From what I saw, I couldn't decide if you were a cowboy or if you are just killing cowboys. Cause I haven't seen you on a horse. And also,
this is true.
You seem to be just exterminating the gringos, as the game puts it. So I'm not sure if you are like a Mexican outlaw or if you're one of the cowboys. But it is very cool Western theme.
Only
regardless.
One way to find out. And
yeah,
it's,
exactly. How much is this thing?
I wanted to say it was around $10, but
why don't
I will
you
look
check
while
that
we
out?
Move on.
Yeah, and in the meantime, I would like to talk about what I played this week.
Star Wars Battlefront.
I did
Ooh,
not play that this
on
week.
Steam right now. It is only $8.49, little 15% off sale. And right now, of 113 reviews, it is very positive.
Yeah, check it out, guys. So besides that, though, I really want to talk about Overwatch, because somehow I was the lucky member of our show that got a beta key over the weekend for the stress test.
Fancy Henry.
Did you guys even opt in?
No.
Nah. Yeah. You guys are so lazy. Oh, Lord. We finally got the ability to say we're media and you just don't even use it. All right. Well, I played it all weekend. And let me tell you guys, it is a game changer. It is huge. I'm predicting it now. It is FPS of the year 2016.
Yes. Yeah.
It's amazing. I've talked about this briefly, but I'm not a huge fan of multiplayer first person shooters. I don't like really, really competitive head to head, I won, you lost type situations in general. I'm just kind of more of a laid back gamer and I prefer single player games. However, Overwatch scratches a strategy itch that I almost didn't even realize I had. Because it's not just a shooter, it's a 6-on-6 team composition based, like, strategy game. I mean, as much as it's a first person shooter, it's about team composition and communication, which I think is really cool. Like, it has, I think, like 24 different characters who have completely unique weapons and skill sets to each character. They all play completely differently and, like, really. It's really enjoyable. Like, almost every character is viable. There was one tank. I can't remember her name. She's a really muscular girl with pink hair who I didn't see much play of. I think I saw her in one game, but every other character I saw regularly. And it's really cool because for those who haven't checked out Overwatch yet, it has the ability to switch characters at any time. I mean, you have to either be in your base or dead, but you can switch characters mid-match, which means there's a constantly evolving meta within every game where it's, you know, the defenders might go 5 bastions, which are robots that can transform into stationary turrets with a force field in front of them and have the ability to self-repair. And then your response is, okay, well, 2 of our characters are going to change out and go the grenade launcher character because he can shoot over the barrier or they can run behind the bastions. And then we've countered their new build.
So how long does an average match last, do you think?
5 to 10 minutes.
Okay, so pretty quick, kind of like most of Blizzard's games.
Yeah.
What you said before the show, there's really nothing else out there like it. What do you think the closest comparison would be for, like, the feel of the mechanics, like the shooting mechanics itself?
For the shooting mechanics? That's actually kind of tough. I mean... My gut says, I guess, Team Fortress 2, but I don't really think so. I mean, because Team Fortress 2 doesn't really have shooting mechanics that strongly.
Sure.
I mean, it's unique per character, the shooting mechanics.
Okay.
It feels very arcade-y.
So they really do cater to each character. They
yes.
make them feel distinct.
I mean, so, yeah, to give you an idea, one of my favorite characters, I'm not going to remember like any of the names because I only got to play it over the weekend, but one of my favorite characters is the sniper girl. Her
Widowmaker?
Widowmaker, thank you. Her main weapon is an SMG, but when you look down the sights, it transforms into a sniper rifle, which does increasing damage based on how long you've been scoped in. Instead of sprinting or anything, she throws a grappling hook when you hit shift, and it pulls you to whatever surface you touch, so you can get to really high sniping points like on a whim. And then her ultimate makes it so that she pulls down her visor and your entire team gets you can see enemies through walls.
So really cool.
They're all moving. Then to juxtapose that, I also played a tank named Bastion, who is a giant medieval knight with a laser shield that can guard. It takes up like three characters wide. And you can slowly advance forward. He has no guns. His only weapon is a giant hammer. And he uses his abilities are to shoot a shockwave forward, smash dudes with a hammer, pull out the shield, and his ultimate slams the ground and stuns like everyone nearby.
Well, I'm interested to see how this holds up and compares to Battleborn with all these hero-based kind of shooters, I suppose, coming out. It'll be kind of flooding the market and fun to play them both.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Although I'm just going to call it now Overwatch, not just FPS the year next year, but it will beat out Battleborn.
Interesting.
It's too good. It's
although I would always, my money would be on Blizzard as well.
It's not just that. Having put hands on, it's one of the best shooters I've ever played. I mean, seriously, it's great. And it's accessible to non-shooter fans.
But Destiny.
Destiny's not even really a shooter. It's more of an RPG.
Well, and I was going to say, what I like about it is I remember playing Time Splitters and all the characters looking different. One thing you get sick of you play, you know what I'm talking about? Yep. Like with Destiny, you essentially play against Grand Theft Auto or whatever.
Well, Destiny's a great example. Yeah. A game that has three races that are all the same height, build, and look. not the same look, except that everyone is wearing full body armor the entire game, right. So it's irrelevant. Oh, and they don't even have unique, like, emotes to you. Like, I don't know.
I get you.
This has so much differentiation, and oh my god, the cutscenes and just like the character models, we're talking Pixar quality animation. It's unbelievable. If you guys haven't seen the launch trailer for Overwatch, it is straight up a Pixar short. It is incredible. It is so good. And if Blizzard can do anything, of course, it's CG, but I love the universe they're creating. I love the characters. I love the story they're kind of hinting at. I think the model for payment is super fair. It's $40 when it releases, and you get all the characters, which is the way to do it. As far as I've seen, there's no progression in the game, which I think is fantastic. You just get a ranking, and I'm not even sure that you can see your ranking, which I think is also great.
So they'll use that for matching purposes?
Yeah, presumably they do. I've heard that they've done a lot of work on the matchmaking system. Oh, speaking of, during the team pick phase, this is such a cool feature. I wish all MOBAs did this. They give you tips on your team composition. Let's say I choose my favorite character, whose name escapes me, but he's a dude with a skull face mask that dual wields sawn off shotguns and can teleport around the map. Say I pick him, somebody else picks a tank, then a third person picks a tank, and everyone else is just sitting. It's going to say not enough damage characters, no builders, and no support. And then the people who have yet to choose their role see in big red letters what roles are yet to be filled. And I've seen in games where people do not talk to each other the entire game, almost every game I've had has had just about a perfect team composition. And those are only suggestions anyways. The game is built in such a way that you can literally just pick five of the same character and do just fine.
They're meant to play off each other?
Well, not just they're meant to play off each other, but you don't have to have the team composition if you have a strategy in mind. Like I said, the five bastions in turret mode can be unstoppable if the other team isn't smart enough to like change up their meta mid game. That's the biggest thing, is going to be training people not to think less in terms of loadouts and more in terms of team composition. It's not about what your weapons are. It's about what your team's weapons are, which I think is really cool. Also, the idea of being able to play dedicated healing characters in a first-person shooter is so cool. Like, it's nothing like the medic in... I got to play as a character who's... he's some kind of South American. I'm not exactly sure where he's from. I think Brazil, possibly. But he's this character who's like... he's a rollerblader... who's like listening to music, and his thing is he's got like a sound gun that left click is like an SMG, burst SMG, right click is like a shotgun knockback effect. But then your shift switches you between two different music types. When you're on one music type, it speeds everyone around you up, and you can activate your special to power it up even more and get it'll speed boost like everyone around you to like 200% movement speed for 10 seconds, which is huge when you're doing team pushes. Or at any time, you can just hit shift, toggle into healing mode. You're an AOE healer. Sorry, I hit my mic. And
settle down, Henry.
And you can use that same power-up ability to just do a quick, like, large chunk heal on everyone within close range of you at once. Like, all of these characters have... Oh, and here, ultimate lets you, like, jump up in the air and smash the ground, and everyone within a radius gets a temporary shield buff. Like, it's just really cool to me that...
Sign me up.
Yeah, all the characters are diverse. The roles, you don't have to shoot people in a shooting game. Like, it's just really interesting. I mean, and they even have... If you are saying, you know, I was almost hoping it was going to be more like Team Fortress 2... It's really not a lot like it, but there are characters that evoke Team Fortress 2 characters. Okay. Like, there's the turret character who he's just a dwarf with a turret. And his thing is he builds a turret. It's upgradable. He collects scrap to upgrade it. It's straight up the engineer from TF2. However, He's got a little bit more punch behind him. He has very little health like the engineer, but he has a gun and stuff, like a decent gun. That's a left click is like a, I don't know, a pistol, but then right click is like a shotgun type thing. And his ultimate is he yells molten core, which I thought was cute. But there are similarities to individual heroes have similarities to characters from other games. There's a soldier 87, I think is his name. His shift is a sprint. His left click is he has a rifle, an automatic rifle, and his right click is a helix missile, which is just a rocket that he fires. He can do it every like 9 seconds or something. And then his ultimate makes it so that he pulls down his visor, another visor ultimate, and anyone who is like on your screen, it will just automatically pick the lowest health target, and you can just hold down fire, and it just picks between everyone who's on your screen and auto aims at their heads. It's super OP. Well, not really. It's just super powerful. And so there's your, like, if you just are coming from an average first-person shooter like Call of Duty or Battlefield where you're just like, I want to shift to sprint and I just want it to play like a normal shooter, right. Play him. Like, it caters to so many different types of gamers. I'm so excited for this game to come out. I'm really feeling the pain since they took my key back after the beta weekend ended. I'm hoping that there's another one coming up soon where I can give you guys more info and probably talk about a couple of new champions knowing them. But yeah, check it out.
Definitely Overwatch something to keep the awesome. Eyes on.
Yes, it's very cool. Max, what have you been playing this week?
Speaking of things that are very cool, Star Wars Battlefront. So I know I missed the debut podcast last week with the launch and everything. Was it worth $60? No. Was it worth $20? Probably not. I've had more.
Dang.
I've had more
harsh words.
Substantial $15 Call of Duty DLC packs than this entire game offers. What I will say, though, is that the one real mode that the game offers, and that's Walker Assault, and its four maps, are absolutely fantastic. And it is some of the most exciting gameplay in the sense that the scale feels perfect.
It's almost like they were going to make a real Battlefield game, right? For a second thing.
The visuals are some of the best looking on console to date.
No argument from me on that. That is a beautiful.
They nail the sound as DICE always does.
Dice does not get credit for literally ripping the sound effects from the movies.
Oh, no. That's not DICE. I mean, they've always
had Lucas
like the battle. I would argue that the battle field games were very authentic and true to the sound.
No, they were. I'm just saying, but in this case,
right. It's not like they get points for movies. You know, ingeniousness and
right. Well, it's like that blaster fire sounds so much like in A New Hope. Just, it's literally the blaster fire from A New Hope. Every time you die, it's the Wilhelm scream.
Right in the middle of everything. It feels good. It, you know, as far as the gameplay. So there's 9 or 10 different game modes. I know there's a new one launching on December 1st when the DLC comes out.
That's more than I thought.
Yeah, but they're half baked at best. You know, there's Blast, which is the team deathmatch. There is a capture and hold the like King of the Hill mode, basically. Blah, I can't talk. Where an escape pod will drop, and each team has to fight for control of it, and the controlling team.
Yeah,
that holds it long enough.
Like
yeah,
mode
they get a point and some bonuses, whatever. Not being able to hop in and out of vehicles, I mean, it just doesn't feel right in a Battlefront game. Not having vehicles laying around, you have to go and collect tokens to
get
them.
Yeah, I hate that. Do they still do the weirdness where your character just like kneels down?
Yeah, and you know what? they actually considered that as part of the gameplay challenge where you have to be in a safe spot to be able to kneel down long enough in order to activate your vehicle or call in your support. Basically, the way
they not understand that the whole thing is you want to feel like you're the one flying.
So what happens is like they're basically making it seem like you're calling in support,
drone,
and then
basically.
They like jump you to wherever this vehicle is.
It's garbage.
It is nice that they included a kind of an air superiority mode, like in prior Battlefield games, where it is only flying in either.
It's still terrestrial, though, right?
It is.
Yeah.
I'm sure that'll change, but the mode feels so good that some people, other video game journalists and whatnot, have suggested that
you know, this is a good reason to bring the Rogue Squadron license to other consoles and developers and see what they can make of it. You know, it's fun. It's just, it's such missed potential. It is not like the other Battlefront games. It is not even like Battlefield. It's very casual. It's all, you put it very well earlier. The spawn points are terrible. You spend a lot of time either running to a location or just dead and on a loading screen.
Yeah, what was I was saying earlier, it's like, what, 80% of the time you're playing in that game, you're either dead or running to the location where there are enemies?
Right, exactly. And there's a really decent opinion piece on Game Informer by Mike Futter, and I'm just going to say the title here. He said that I'm disappointed in myself for forgiving Star Wars Battlefront's shortcomings. And he goes and explains everything that's wrong with it. And quoting here, for all its shortcomings, its shallow progression arc, its dearth of content, its unimpressive smaller modes, I still keep coming back for more. And it's the same thing. There are four maps. And technically, there's like little enclosed versions of each map, smaller parts that are compartmentalized so you can play the other modes in those.
Right, right. But they're not available to each game mode.
Right, correct. Basically, there's
like one version of each map per game mode.
Exactly. So like this, there's either large scale, which is the four big maps, locations is what they call them. They don't even call them maps. Or the
maybe that's why they're not going to charge for map packs. They're going to charge for location packs. That's
brace your wallets.
No.
But yeah, you know, it's true. I keep going back to it. It's fun. They do what they do. The best of the game is done so well, you just want to keep experiencing it. But as far as progression, unlock, it's just very, there's no sense of progression in the game because everything is so walled off, and even when you get to it, it's not that great. People stick with what they got at the start of the game.
Well, and when you say the best of it, like, I'm just curious because, like, I'm young enough that I was a bright-eyed kid when the prequels came out,
yes,
the movies, and it took me like a good year before I was okay with not liking them because I wanted to like them so badly. And so I'm wondering, you say the best moments. Can you give us a couple examples of actual best moments that can't be
like
lived in other
games? And this was a pretty common feel from the beta, I guess, but the Walker Assault on Hoth, just the Walker Assault on any planet, it's so immersive, like running between the legs of a walker and just having everything move around you. And then in Endor, all the rebels, they're hidden very well. The maps are very dense. You just all of a sudden are getting attacked from
the
bushes and
I guess
the trees
I should
up top.
Ask,
and
are there any good moments that aren't just atmosphere? Because I mean, that's cool and all, but I assumed you meant gameplay.
Well, gameplay wise, yes. It's, again, if you just want to play a Star Wars game where you literally have a blaster and maybe a jetpack if you've leveled up that far,
then play Shadows of the Empire.
You could do that.
N64 game.
But it doesn't look as pretty.
It's kind of fun.
But it looks
beautifully N64 muddy.
That's all you can ask for. But no, I mean, it plays well. The gameplay is good. The issues with the gameplay are, I'm sorry, as
That's
a shooter.
Very interesting
as,
that you'd say
as
that.
As a shooter.
The main complaint I've heard is that the gunplay is so incredible.
Oh, I'm fine with the gunplay.
Because, like, the guns are not very varied.
No, they're not.
Not very
they're not.
Varied.
They're not.
And, I mean, the shot like speed is way too low. Your shot spread is ridiculously big.
I've only been using the weapons
accuracy.
I've started with. No, it doesn't. Exactly.
I mean, these are all like staple things of quality shooters, and it doesn't meet like any of them. Like, what about the shooting mechanics is good?
It's just a fun little arcadey shooter is the way I'm looking at it. I guess I approached it as a very casual game. With
do you usually spend $60 on fun little
oh no I and I and casual? I said it's not worth it.
Yeah,
but you know,
I'm more asking for everybody else.
Oh yeah, like, no, that's what, fair that's
are
fair.
Any of these redeeming things?
Oh no, not at all. I would not recommend buying it at this point. They've already announced that sequels are going to be made. They will surely tap the prequels and the coming sequels.
They're idiots though. If they're like, don't. Okay, it's one of the best looking games ever. The biggest complaint is the lack of like proper FPS mechanical development,
right,
and also the lack of content from the original game. Do not release Battlefront 2. Release expansions that add back in Galactic Conquest and a single player, right,
and more locations. Characters.
Yeah,
we don't have to call them maps, but give us more locations.
For God's sake, if it looks any better, my eyes are going to bleed. Like, I need that. We do not need them to rebuild it every single time. This is right. Battlefield. Like, I don't want a yearly installment. I'll take a yearly expansion pack. Hell, I'd rather pay $40 twice a year for expansions than I would $60 once sure. a year for a re-release where they strip features out every year anyways.
And to speak to the progression, because that's important.
Oh, God, it's so messed up.
So there are 16 guns or so, maybe less. I think it's 16. Anyways, both sides get the same weaponry.
Yeah,
as you level up, the guns become available for purchase with the credits you earn by playing the game.
Yep.
So,
but they are, you don't get to choose which gun you want. It is like there's a tier.
Well, there's tiers, but you don't have to buy them as you unlock. You can save up for the higher tier guns. No, you don't have
to
buy them,
but you do have to be level X
yes, in correct.
Order to be eligible correct. To buy them, which is relevant.
And another thing besides the guns are the power-ups, your hand items, your specials, whatever you want to call them, different kinds of grenades, turrets, whatever. Sure. So you really gotta, you know, pick and choose what you want, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because none of them are terribly different. The only game changing item is the jetpack, which you get, I believe, in the,
it's like one of the max levels, isn't it?
No, I wanted to say it was at like 8.
Oh, I'm thinking, something. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the personal but, shield.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that. And the weirdest thing is the cosmetic items. So like the rebels can be all these different alien races and everything.
Sure.
The stormtroopers are all human, helmetless stormtroopers, and these are going for a couple thousand points to unlock. And it's like, why would you ever want to be a helmetless stormtrooper? The next stormtrooper that you get with a helmet,
be told you're a little short for a stormtrooper.
That might work, but I doubt that's most people's motivation.
I don't know. I was just trying to think of the only time in the movie I can think of a stormtrooper not wearing a helmet, and it was Luke.
But at the end of the character selection, then once you like reach max level, you can buy a really expensive shadow stormtrooper, and then that's it.
That is kind of cool.
It's cool.
See,
but
what I would want though would be like, give me the Imperial Guard costume, like the red robes
sure.
with like
yeah.
with
none
the,
of that.
The red, it's like the red stormtrooper with like robes and stuff.
And that's
like
what the other Battlefront games are so great about, like all the variety, the weapons, yeah. the
it says something
the fun.
That it says something that one of my favorite levels in the old Battlefront 2 was the terrible prequel Trade Commission. Or Trade Federation fight, because you could fly between ships.
Yes,
and then there was ground combat with capture points inside each ship, and it was awesome because it was two tiers of fighting, because you had to take down like generators and stuff on the outside of the ship to progress on the inside of each respective ship. Like, and that's a prequel setting, and I think that was a fantastic level.
Yeah.
I hate the prequels.
It was very. There was a lot of love and passion put into Battlefront 2.
Yeah, Battlefront 2 felt like it felt like a mod. It felt like a player-made mod. That's what was so cool about it. Like, it felt like it was a passion project of
right.
Of love from fans.
Not to hate on the first one. The first one was great too.
Yeah, the first one was great, but the second one was like one of my favorite games of all time.
Yes.
It's so good.
And that's all we wanted, Dice. We wanted.
They tricked me into enjoying driving around one of those clunky Episode 1 land speeders on Naboo. Like, seriously, it's a good game.
I might have to play that when I get home.
Quick question. So I didn't like Episode 1 or anything, but I did like the Pod Racer game. Am I alone in thinking that?
Pod Racer is considered
one of the best Star Wars games, actually. I mean, not overall, but in terms of like the spinoff games and stuff that aren't
next to Jedi Power Jedi. Battles.
I like Jedi Outcast.
That game is so garbage. The PlayStation 1 fighting game?
Yeah.
Oh, I hated that game. And I didn't know who half the characters were, and I was so confused as to why Leia had a lightsaber.
Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. You're thinking of Masters of
yes,
whatever. Jedi Power Battles was a brawler.
No, I am thinking of Jedi Power Battles.
Really?
Yeah.
Leia wasn't in it.
I'm pretty sure she was.
It was Episode 1.
Oh, then I'm not that. I'm thinking of a different PlayStation brawler. Or, no, I'm sorry, not brawler. It was a fighting game.
Oh yeah, like one on like yes. an arena, like Mortal Kombat or whatever. Yeah, it was Masters of Tell.
That's what
whatever. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Sorry,
but
that'd be cool.
What have you been playing, Tom? Besides,
what have you been playing?
So I've been playing some Fallout 4, like a lot of other people.
Yeah.
But no, I still, because I was on the first one, right, and then you guys talked about it last week, and I do like that the stories. It's kind of incredible that a game that of that.
Sorry,
scope,
you were on the first one. What?
First podcast about Fallout 4. I should be specific about that.
Well, no, I just didn't know.
No, I mean, I do like that, and I don't want to give away any spoilers or whatever, but there are.
Please don't.
Yeah, very kind of like cinematic moments and good dialogue in a game of that scope, because sometimes the issue I have with kind of big, sandbox games is that sometimes they forget about the little details, I guess. That's kind of how the best way to put it. And so the characters are interesting. The dialogue's good. I'm about between 15 and 20 hours in. So I'm, a lot of other people, you guys have both probably played much longer than I have.
I'm on my second character.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't think this is a spoiler. I like the reference to Fenway Park, just being a sports fan. Pretty cool. And for you, Henry, where you've been to Boston, I think it's probably pretty cool. My thing is I just want to see more places, because now this looks unique. The problem with DC, and it's almost like I want them to go back to DC, because when you were there, there were the monuments and stuff, but then you were in rubble the whole time, and it's kind of the same broken buildings or whatever.
I mean, you would recognize even less from DC though, outside of like, because I mean, I feel like the monuments have all been covered. Like, it's not like you'd recognize like the projects of DC or something.
Yeah, and the DLC I liked best was Pittsburgh, because I've been to that city, and
Pit was pretty great.
Yeah, and I think that's something
mostly
that,
for the spinning buzzsaw axe.
Yeah, no, it just, I don't know, I
the chopper.
That, what's encouraging about it is I think like Philadelphia or San Francisco, in my mind, are kind of the two natural places to go. I'm really curious how they'd interpret that.
I really hope they don't do Philadelphia for the next one, just because I think
to go
I've
to
had
the
enough,
other coast.
Well, I'm just, I've had enough of the militia settlers history of America setting. I like it in this one, but I don't necessarily need more.
Could you go abroad? I mean, I feel like it'd be kind of cool
could you
to
go
do
abroad,
like London or do something like that. I don't know.
No, I don't think it would work. I mean, I feel like the whole you could it would be interesting, but I feel like the whole aesthetic of Fallout is 1950s Americana.
Yeah.
Like specifically America.
Yeah.
I mean, and it would be possible, but I think part of the problem is that I'm sure that it has the as an American, I wouldn't know very I mean, outside of like a couple key landmarks in Europe, I mean, it's not like I'd recognize a bunch of stuff from all over London or something like that. But I appreciate what you're saying. I do think it would be interesting. I mean, what I'd like to see is the DLC doing the same stuff as we saw in Fallout 3, which is going all over the country. Like, I thought that the Backwoods Maryland.
Yeah, that one was really good. Yeah.
As long as we don't get an Operation Anchorage, I'll be happy.
Yeah, that one, that was not.
That was the worst DLC.
No, the worst DLC. Well, I'm thinking the other game, but the worst DLC was Sierra Madre. But yeah, no, I think the other thing too is people really fixated on the fact that I guess you could get across the map in 11 minutes or something like that.
That's stupid. You can walk across the GTA 5 map in like 12 minutes. Like,
yeah. It's
still huge.
Yeah. And what I like about it is it is interactive. And I almost, the issue I had, because the other game I'm playing is Tomb Raider, and it's almost a nice kind of compliment to this, because I almost get like overwhelmed in that game, because I'm like, okay, I don't, I've stopped doing the storyline because I don't want to finish the game, obviously. So now I'm like doing Brotherhood of Steel stuff, and I'm doing like, taking care of my areas or whatever. And it's almost too much going on at once.
Well, and that's the kind of a funny side note is like, yeah, maybe you can walk from one side of the wasteland in 12 minutes if you encounter zero enemies and don't check out any points of interest and don't go inside a single place and don't run into a single quest giver or anything. But like, that's not how you play open world sandbox games. Like,
one curiosity I have, and this is a little off the beaten path, but you guys saw they had the mod where you could actually see what the dialogue was.
Yep.
Yeah. Why can't they just put that in there? You know what I mean?
Because you were dumb and didn't buy the game on PC.
Yeah, I'm just.
Bam.
Now I hear if you get a patch though, it's going to screw up that mod, right? You might have told me. You might have said that on the podcast.
Yes or no? What I said was it could, because it depends on like I can't say. It depends on the nature of the update and also if the modder is on top of updating it and the way that he's coded, because it's pre the construction set. I don't know what kind of scripting he's using to do that, or if he's literally just changing game files. So. Modding is great, but just when there's a patch on the cusp anyways, just wait for the patch because it's going to break most of your mods if they aren't updated like the day of
the other patch. The other thing, too, is you guys saw there was an article out about a game-breaking bug. I forget which it's Monsignor Plaza or something like that.
I have not encountered anything like that.
Okay. I don't know if you guys saw it. So I saw an article about that. I don't know when you would
encounter. What console was it on?
I believe it was across. I'm going to pull it up real, real quick here. But
there are no game-breaking bugs on PC. You have a console menu.
As one of the...
Word on the street is that use of... The console menu is corrupting some save files.
Yeah, have you ever played a Bethesda game before? Yeah, overuse.
Overuse of a console menu always
can cause save file corruption. But if you're like changing your stats constantly, changing your character name, like renaming NPCs, like toggling clipping in God mode constantly, like yeah, I could see that happening.
Okay,
but like. I mean, that's nothing new. They always warn you in every back to Morrowind. They've been saying, use this sparingly. I've never had that happen. I mean, I've played thousands of hours of Bethesda games, and I've never had any issue with using the console every time I'm in a bind.
But you guys didn't run into this Monsignor Plaza? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea.
Okay, I don't know. That's where they say if you go there, it could break your game, and they say it is across all three. Consoles.
What, or, just going there, Will?
That
can't be right.
Let's see here. It's a settlement quest, which requires players to head to Monsignor Plaza.
I've done all the settlement quests on my first playthrough. I must not have had...
Although, that weapon you get for doing those, pretty cool.
Yeah, right. Anyways, though...
Is it easy to figure out how to build buildings? Like, I've broken stuff down and I've added...
Yeah, it's incredibly easy. I mean, it uses the same kind of building settings as any modern survival game, like Rust or Stranded Deep or anything like that. I mean, it's just, can you snap stuff to the base? If you can, then you can make bases.
Yeah, I was doing... I guess it just looked terrible. Like, I was in the...
You should just be better at it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll learn. I'll learn. But I was... No, I was in... What's the drive-through with the pond?
Starlight.
So, yeah, at one point... Because that has, like, nothing in it. So, like, at one point, I needed more beds. And I got all frustrated trying to build a building. And I just slapped one of those, like, giant tents. Or, it's not a tent, but, like, one of those
the
giant
prefabs.
Huts. Yeah. And it's like it's actually pretty worthless. There's not a lot of room in those things.
Well, the idea with the prefabs is you check the ones that don't have walls, and then you only use the walled ones for the outsides of your building. Like, I have a prefab that's like 4x4.
Oh, okay.
And then it's two stories. So
Aren't you fancy? Think
outside of the box. Yeah, and I have level 3 of every type of trader there.
I did like the video of the dude that made the tallest building possible in the game.
I didn't see that. He like hit the skybox limit.
Yeah, basically it's right over the power lines, and then you can't build any higher than that. But yeah, it was a pretty cool sniper nest. Do you outfit all your settlements to like fully build them up, or do you get like one main one and the rest just up to par?
Well, you're a dummy if you don't just have one main one, because of the way that the supply chains work. Like, supply lines, they're bidirectional, so you basically have one place where you dump.
I scooted in my chair. It sounded like a fart, and Tom's giggling.
I work with children. Okay, so the supply lines are bidirectional. So basically, all you need to do is choose a hub. I chose Sanctuary, and just create a supply line to every single other settlement, and then it will just share the. Since they're bidirectional, it will share the all the stuff sitting in your workshop with. Literally every other one.
There. Okay.
So they all have a shared item resource pool. You're going to get a massive headache if you are like putting it all between different places, especially because if you actually look inside the workbench, you can't see everything. It's when you're crafting stuff, it's available, and when you are building, it is available for like materials to build like the prefabs and stuff, but you can't just look in the workbench. And so if you actually need to be able to access your workbench for like a general item pool, you want it all to be at one settlement.
Oh yeah, and I agree. Also, is there something I'm missing, or is there not a way to just dismantle something from your inventory, or do you need to be in crafting mode to do that?
Why are you dismantling anything in your inventory?
Well, I guess I guess it would all just go into the workbench if I want to dismantle.
Yeah, I mean, anything in the workbench is automatically broken down if you need the materials.
Right.
So, like, I mean, why bother breaking it down to its parts
until you need it?
Yeah, as I understand it, there's some kind of trick on consoles where you can highlight multiple items to break down at once from your inventory by, like, holding down the select button or something.
Okay.
But for me, I mean, I just literally dump everything that I'm not selling into my workbench. And who cares? There's no max size to the workbench or anything. And it's smart enough to automatically – it keeps everything assembled until you need it disassembled, which I find is almost better just because – you never know, like, what.
Do you put weapons into it, or will it destroy the mods?
I have level 2 of Scrapper, so I do.
Okay.
Same. Which, that gives you, like, copper and, you know, screws and stuff, which are very valuable. Like, that's the only thing I do with pipe guns, because they're garbage. So they're worth more in scrap than they are in caps. So, yeah, I mean, I put anything worth less than, I think, like, 75 caps. Just, it's a ratio thing. Wait to value. Generally, anything worth less than 5 caps per pound, I just throw into my scrap bench.
Okay. Two questions. One probably dumb, one smart. Can you move parts from one weapon to another? Like, I guess I haven't figured out.
Yes, but you can't do it directly. You need to take a middle step. So, like, say you have a really cool scope on a gun, or say you have a really upgraded gun that you've been tweaking, and then a random enemy drops the same gun but with a really cool scope on it, and you want to put that scope on your modified version. Let's say it's a legendary, so it makes more sense that way. What you would have to do is craft the iron sights for the gun that has the upgraded scope and switch in those iron sights, then the scope mod goes into your inventory and you can then put it onto the other gun. So you have to replace, if you're pulling a mod from one gun, you have to replace it with an equivalent mod from that slot, which you can craft. I usually just do like a basic receiver, for example, to replace like the really cool upgraded receivers you often find in the wasteland. And then once you've switched the first gun's mod part that you actually want to put on your other gun, you can just throw it out or whatever. Or I personally just keep like a blank copy of almost every gun in my workbench so that if I need to, I can just take parts from that.
Cool.
Okay. Or sorry, I keep a blank of every type of mod that I've crafted. I don't sell any of my mods. I just dump them right back into the workbench once I'm done modding a gun.
Gotcha. So that I had to figure out. The other
do that though, because I'm pretty sure the mods have all weigh a pound, and like that adds up.
Yeah.
And then the second one, more general, is just like, what motivated you, I guess, to start over? Because it seems like a game that, like, the more you play and the more you invest into it, it gets that much better.
Without going into any kind of spoiler territory, the main story really gates what quests are available to you. You have to make some hard choices in the story that completely shut off multiple quest lines. And once you've finished the game, there's actually a lot less to do than it may have initially seemed. I'm doing a second playthrough to try and get through more of the content this time. However, let's put it this way. I'm really, really missing having a Warrior's Guild line, a Thieves Guild line, a Mage's Guild line, an Assassin's Guild line, and a main quest, and like side quests that have full lines and stuff from like the Elder Scrolls series. Because in this, I can't name them, but there are 3 main factions, and then there are Nick's mysteries, basically, which I'm not going to go into detail about who he is because it's a mild spoiler, but that's it. And that's and then everything else is side quests or radiant quests and there's so many. I think part of the reason it seems like there's so much to do is they've done a slightly better job than Skyrim did of giving you the radiant quests. You're not going to like the leader of the radiant quests are the quest system from Skyrim where you never run out of quests. They like repopulate. They just randomly generate them. And like with the Minuteman quests, it took me probably, it wasn't until I had repeated a quest twice that I was like, oh, this is just the same. They are just randomly generated.
And it is kind of cool, though, because you'll talk with your buddies about, oh, like, what did you do in this scenario? And you'll be like, oh, that's not at all what I did. And then I was like, oh, obviously Radiant Quest System from Skyrim. But, like, my roommate and I, we've both been playing, and we'll play for an hour or two and then, like, kind of meet up and talk about what we've been doing. And our experiences vary completely differently, even though we're both focusing on the Minutemen. And I think it's a pretty cool thing because it brings you to places you otherwise wouldn't go exploring.
Yeah, and it is a good way to fill out your settlements that you haven't discovered yet. But all that said, I do think it totally like bogs down your quests quest log, and I really don't like the way that I've never liked the idea of X settlement is under attack and you have Y amount of time to respond to this or else you get a penalty. And it's like, I hate that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's a very bad tracking system for which settlements need your attention.
Yes. And also, I think that they did a poor job of streamlining. Look, if your guy in town knows that there's a settlement in trouble enough to tell you, hey, there's like super mutants messing with this settlement, why doesn't he just tell you where they are? How come I have to waste all my time traveling to the settlement in question and asking them so that then I can go to the actual place where the mission is, finish it, then go back to the settlement to turn in the quest to them, then go back to the leader of the militia to turn it into him.
Well, hey, now you're the leader of the militia.
Yeah,
you're
sure
just
you
going
are.
Back to your second command.
Because you do so much leading in that game.
But no, they make you go back to Preston Garvey for everything.
Yeah, I constantly. Also, I don't know if it's a bug or not, but he was giving me two quests at a time, and it got very confusing after a while.
No, it's not a bug. I've been getting it too. Sometimes he'll give you like an area to clear out for settlement locations.
Yeah,
and then the rest of it is not really settlement locations, but already pre-established groups of people that require your assistance. So
no,
it's like
I hear
two
you.
Different
but
lines.
I've gotten once you've cleared everything, it just does two radiant quests, which is weird.
Okay.
Like it's kind of confusing. And also, some settlement quests are not considered full blown quests; they're considered miscellaneous quests to make it really easy to miss them. It's just not a great way to handle quests. I never thought I'd be saying this, but I wish there was more content a little bit. I feel like it's.
You want to be as bogged down as Witcher 3?
Well, no, but as no, God, no. But I would like it to be as bogged down as, I don't know, Skyrim.
Yeah.
I mean, is that unreasonable? But all that said, I am doing a second playthrough, and the story is very intriguing. I'm excited to do our spoiler cast in a month or whatever when everyone has finished the game because it's very... I don't know how I feel about the story. I don't know how I feel about the twist, and I definitely don't know how I feel about the ending. So... at least for the choices that I made, which I do want to say it very much feels like none of your choices, as far as I can tell, have any bear. There is one choice you make that determines the ending you get.
Really? Because with the reviews I read, it sounded like there are some difficult choices that widely change how the game plays out.
There's a choice that I was given in the entire course of the game that determined basically everything for me.
Okay.
I guess you could argue two choices, but I'm not sure that one of them was actually a choice or not, because as you guys may or may not have discovered, being able to play like the evil and stuff, you really can't do it. You can literally be told to do something and you can say, I'm refusing your quest, and they'll be like, well, it wasn't actually a request, it's an order. And it's just like, why? What is role playing about this game if whatever. But all that said, I know I love to be negative. Still loving it. I had like 2.5 days played in this game that I'm saying is not enough content. It's just because Bethesda set the bar so high, and I'm already on my second character at like level 15. I'm doing, on Max's recommendation, I have a character who has 1 intelligence and 10 luck, and I have level 2 already of the Idiot Savant perk.
It's hilarious.
And also, as a side note, I did not realize the sound effect. I couldn't figure out where it was coming from for the longest time.
Right?
Yeah, because it's every time that it triggers, the Pip-Boy guy goes, "Durr."
That's funny. That's funny.
Ridiculous.
It's, yeah, and there's a little, I suppose, visual that goes along with it.
Yeah,
that's rather funny.
It's the perk icon.
But what was the end level of your first playthrough?
Character level?
Yeah.
Somewhere right around 47 or 50.
Okay.
Area.
And did you feel like you were able to explore enough of the perks?
No. And in fact, well, sort of. I'd gotten to a point where I was no longer like knew what perks I was going to get at every level because I felt like I needed them because I had like master lock picking and a lot of the required stuff. I had level 4 of like armor and stuff like that, or I might have only had level 3. But it's... The way the new leveling system works, it's almost a little less satisfying when you run out of content than it has been in the past, because I felt like I didn't get to finish my character build, and I'm not willing to grind for it. And I already grinded. Like, level 47 or 50 or whatever, that's actually, in my opinion, that's very high for what you would have if you just were someone who's not crazy into Bethesda games. Like, you could do, if you just did a straight playthrough of this game, I'm guessing you could beat it before level 30.
Okay.
And that's that, which I think is how they did it in Fallout 3, but obviously Fallout 3's perks and leveling were so different, you can't really even compare the level numbers.
If you wanted to just go story mission to story mission to story mission and beat the main playthrough, how long do you think that would take?
I'd say it's about 16 missions.
Okay.
I'd say it would take you about 8 hours.
All right. Just curious.
Yeah, so on those...
Roughly.
On that
note, I do want to focus on my main character.
And that's assuming you take the path that I took.
Right, right. Okay. I think it would be cool to have a second character to see how the choices differ.
I'll say this. Experimental. I'll say that. Well, it's pretty obvious what the how the choices are going to differ. Like, it's actually incredibly obvious because the choices are all binaries. But I'm pretty sure I took the shortest possible. I didn't know it at the time, but the decisions I made, I'm pretty sure, cut out the maximum possible amount of content.
Okay.
So that's why I rolled another character. And unfortunately, I'm failing miserably at my evil playthrough because, god damn it, you can only be a dick in this game. You cannot be evil. You just can't. You can be, a sarcastic prick.
Yes.
Yeah. You can, you know, not... I guess you cannot pet your dog or something. Like, I don't know. Yeah. You can't be mean. Like, you can't. Or you can be mean, but you can't be evil. I'm sorry. I know it's terrible, but I miss when you go do, like, a slave freeing mission or whatever with the bomb collars, having the option to tell them, no, yeah, just run for it. You'll be fine. And then their collars detonate.
Oh, man.
Like, you're supposed to be evil. The closest I came was there was a side mission I did where I found a – this is a really minor spoiler, so tune out for 30 seconds if you're really concerned, but this is a side quest that's totally optional, not related to anything. You find a kid who has a ghoul kid who's been trapped inside a fridge for the entire since the bombs dropped, and he asks you to help him find his family, and along the way to trying to find where his family used to live, a slave trader walks up to you and offers you 500 caps for him. And I was like, I guess... this is the closest thing I've seen to a truly, like, evil choice in the game.
What about not returning the egg?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Did you go to the Salem Witch Trials building?
No.
Oh, what?
I don't look up where to go online.
No, this was not looked up. I overheard it, and this is spoiler-free, everybody. I was in Diamond City, and these people were talking about the Salem Witch Museum area, I guess, and so I traveled up there, and it is one of the scariest, creepiest things, and I highly recommend it. Just go up along the coast.
If you say nothing more, I'll check it out.
Nope.
Okay.
Nothing more.
All right.
But I feel like, there's a lot of content in this game, and it is worth taking your time and exploring, and one thing I would recommend is avoid using fast travel, because... You experience the world and you get all these little random events and just encounters that you otherwise would not experience.
Or do fast travel all the time. Also an option.
So it is an option.
That's what I do.
So your recommendation.
But look at how much content you missed.
Well, I mean, it was my first playthrough.
Oh, that's fair.
On a second playthrough. I'm not trying. I wasn't trying to hit all the content on the first playthrough. I just kind of wanted to get a first impressions of the game.
Very fair.
I was trying. I actually kind of rushed through it so that I could talk about it on the show.
Yeah. So my question is, I mean, we're planning on doing a spoiler episode in a month, but I should really
do it, Tom.
No, I'm not going to spoil anything. I should really push off the main story mission for a while, right? Like, level up, try to go through.
Yes and
no.
There's a very obvious point in the main story. Okay, I'll put it this way because it couldn't be any more obvious at this point in the game. When the twist happens, that's when you're good to stop on the main story for a while. But until the twist happens, there's a bunch of content that's still not available to you.
Okay, good to know.
That's all I'm going
to
say.
No, that's what I was trying to get
It'll be blatantly obvious what the twist is, and don't worry, you don't just have like three missions after the twist. The twist happens about halfway through the main quest. So.
Okay. That's what I was getting at.
Yes. Right. And you should do it because, like with the Diamond City quest, there is stuff that you're kind of missing out on until then.
Right. Like, you mean like getting to Diamond City?
Yes, like how I was insisting on the first episode that people went straight to Diamond City because there's just
so
like,
you get up the twist, you get then. To the point and the twist happens and then stop the main quest.
I mean, it'll be pretty obvious once after the twist happens, once everything gets back to normal, then just go ahead and explore again. But I would recommend playing to the twist too, because you're going to want to think about it for a while. Don't rush through.
Go for it.
So I was going to say, but you should get to that point as quick as possible. That's what
I wouldn't say as quick as possible, but I would say
focus on it. Don't neglect it.
Okay.
I wouldn't I would do the militia quests before that probably, but then that.
What else have you guys been playing? Because I got a couple pretty cool games to talk about.
Well, I did play something else. I played some Heroes of the Storm, which has not held up really well for me.
Really?
Yeah. So Heroes of the Storm, we talked about a little earlier today, but it's the Blizzard MOBA. It's kind of with characters from all over their franchise. They've added in almost like a third the characters from when I last played. It's like the roster is huge and daunting. I still hate the price model. It's like you either you do not have the characters unlocked by default. You have to pay in-game currency to unlock them and all that. But it's just like the queue times are like 8 minutes now for a match. On a Sunday night, my queue times were like 8 minutes, and I was really surprised. Like,
interesting.
I think that Blizzard has a real problem when they release new games, because they push their newest title so hard every time that I think that they're migrating a lot of their fans just game to game rather than bringing in new people all the time. Like when Hearthstone came out, I stopped playing WoW. Then when the next WoW expansion came out, I went back to WoW. Then the new Diablo, this is all out of order here, but then let's say then the Diablo expansion came out, I went back and played just Diablo hardcore. Then I got bored of that and I went back to Warcraft for a while. Then I got then Goblins and Gnomes came out, so I went and played a bunch of Hearthstone. Then Heart of the Swarm came out, Heart of the Swarm came out, so I played some StarCraft 2, but I never was playing two of the games at once. It's always back and forth, and I think that's what's happened right now. Literally everyone is playing the new Hearthstone DLC, expansion.
Although, side note, sorry to interrupt, they're not releasing the next wing this week. They're just arbitrarily taking a week off, and that disappointed me.
Arbitrarily, or because they are human beings who have a holiday?
I assume that they had the DLC all created in advance, ready to go. I figured.
I suppose it's possible.
I mean, they can't be creating everything within a span of a week.
No, I didn't. Wasn't saying within the span of a week, but it's they probably have a development schedule that
caters
to them having the holiday weekend. I wonder if maybe people play less too, or maybe they have less purchases on like family weekends or whatever. But I don't know. That is kind of a bummer. As long as there's a tavern brawl, who cares?
Yeah, that is true.
But I don't know. It just it feels like, I'm not gonna say, it feels like a cold product. Like it feels like it needs to be heated back up. Like I feel like I don't want to say they've abandoned it, especially because they just added in Cho'Gall, which is actually really cool. It's a the new champion is a two-headed ogre. Two players control a single character.
Really?
Yeah, it's really interesting. But besides that, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like that game has legs. Like that, out of all the Blizzard games that have come out, out of like the last five Blizzard games to come out, Heroes of the Storm, same acronym, has got to be the weakest one. I mean, I'm more excited about Legacy of the Void, the new StarCraft II expansion, than I am about Heroes of the Storm. And Heroes of the Storm is barely out. I mean, that's been out for what, like a year? Not even a year?
Oh, by not even close. I remember when it launched this summer.
I'm sorry. I was including the beta.
Oh, no, that's fair. But the thing that attracted me to it was the exclusive Hearthstone back, and I got to level 6 in it, and I was bored of it.
Yeah, I now have that's the joke. I now have the exclusive Hearthstone back, the exclusive level 70 character in Diablo mount, and I also have fly around on a Hearthstone card back.
Yes.
And then also I have a wolf mount for having a level 100 character in World of Warcraft.
What's the mount in Diablo?
It's like Azrael's. Not Azrael.
Oh wait, I'm sorry. You get a mount from Diablo in Heroes of the Storm.
You get a mount in Heroes of the Storm from having a level 70 in Diablo.
Okay, gotcha. I thought you got something in Diablo for playing the game.
You get a banner in Diablo.
Okay.
And I think in World of Warcraft you get maybe a pet or something. You get all of the games have this cross.
Sure, which is cool. It's cool that they have the support.
It's pretty neat. Like I know that there was a thing where like if you played it was like you got Diablo for free if you bought or when you bought Diablo in Heart of the Swarm for or god dang it I did it again Heroes of the Storm, the other HOTS, you got it for doing some kind of Diablo promotional thing, like
sure.
It unlocked him for free or whatever. So
well, hopefully we can get some card packs in Hearthstone for playing Overwatch.
Yeah, they'll never do that. They'll probably give you some card backs though.
I'm down.
Yeah. And honestly, you won't need anything to encourage you to play Overwatch.
Good. I just like my card packs.
All right. What?
And I didn't drop $10 on a set of card packs today when I found out that the expansion wasn't releasing this week.
I'm so proud of you. So what else have you played this
week? Yeah, so I got a couple cool mobile games to talk about. One I've brought up before, but I just need to reiterate. So it's called Spider Rite of the Shrouded Moon. And it is a sequel to the first game, which was called Spider. But basically, so you play a spider, and you are exploring a manor and some estate grounds. And so each room, there will be, like, there's an overworld map, and you select which room you go to, and there will be a number of bugs flying around, and you have to create webs by tapping on the screen where you want them and controlling the movement of the spider. And when you collect enough bugs, or all the bugs, you'll find secrets, the next level will unlock, and there's, like, this whole background of exploring the mansion, figuring out the secrets, and the story going on there. It's very immersive.
Cool.
For a mobile game. It is not free. I like my pay-to-play games, not... pay once and play. I'm sorry, on iPhone.
Sure.
But the other game, it just launched this week. It's called Last Horizon. It's a lunar lander type mechanics where you can turn your spaceship in 360 degrees, and then you just tap to use the
lunar
thrusters.
Lunar lander. Even asteroid.
No, you've never played Lunar Lander?
No, I have. I'm just saying, like, how about you go for the more reference that people actually
I always
get.
Think of Lunar Lander or a floppy rocket.
I got one for you. Asteroids.
That works. But, so you start on Earth, which has been totally destroyed, and you have to find a new planet. So there's, like, four different, like, scenarios. And the first one, you take off from Earth, and you just are flying through space, and these little indicators will come up on your screen, and you'll come across other planets, and you have to safely land on them. But, like, there'll be meteorite showers and, like, other debris in space, and the planets are rotating. You'll get pulled into their gravity field. And basically the goal is to, like, harvest as many planets as you can, find resources, and there's some alien technology and things like that, and then you move on to the next stage. And it's actually really addicting, really quick, easy, casual pick up and go. I think it's only $2.99. Well worth it. Cool feel, little bit of story, nice sound, just very addicting.
Really quick, I had two mobile games I wanted to recommend. One, they're both in the same vein. They're both, what is the name of the game? Pick. It's that 3DS puzzle game, Picto. They're nanograms.
So Henry played a game.
Picross. There it is.
So
they're both like basically just ripoffs of Picross for iOS, but they are both excellent. One of which I heard from the Giant Bombcast this week, and the other one, which I just kind of found looking around on Reddit. If you like those, if you don't know what they are, they're kind of like Sudoku with color by numbers. It's kind of hard to explain, but they're very fun brain teasers. I recommend free games because I'm cheap. Like you guys, I'm sure. And so I would recommend Paint It Black, which is excellent. And also Hungry Cat. Hungry Cat. And then it's cut off. But if you just search Hungry Cat, it'll come right up. It's and they are both really fun brain teasers and great games to just kind of play when you're trying to kill time. Really quick.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk? Do you want to just give us we can do more detail about Tomb Raider next week, because I know you're in a hurry.
Yeah, John's been playing Tomb Raider. No, I just recommended if you kind of want a game, it's obviously very different than Fallout. Just kind of, it's almost like playing a movie, basically. And so if you want something that's more linear and you don't have to you know, explore around or whatever. John and I will talk about it next week,
though. Yes, but general consensus is that it is quite good, better than the original.
Yeah, and I think I'm an hour and a half in or whatever, but I just...
Oh, yeah, let's wait till you've actually played the game.
Yeah, no, but I will say already there, though, like, it's streamlined so well with the cutscenes. It's not as though you go through action.
Yeah, well, let's see how it is in halfway through the game, because remember, the first, like, 2 hours are where they tend to be very front and heavy on that stuff.
Fair enough.
But also, really quick, there's a funny Fallout 4 statistic that Bethesda released a week or... Yeah, so 15% of players after a week and a half of being launched, like, people that purchased the game and started playing it, were still in the vault.
Ha!
So
yeah, that's incredible. Well, I'm guessing though part of that too is that I wonder if that's what they say about people who never even booted it up.
Well, you don't start in the vault, so.
Oh yeah, that's true. Although I wonder if they can detect that. But yeah, that's fair.
Well, I suppose what they look at is the achievements that have been unlocked.
Who in
and
the hell
yeah, right.
Would only get
15%. It's like they got to the vault and probably just never picked it up again for whatever
reason.
But
I don't
reason.
Understand. Like that's like. 10 minutes into the game, yeah. Like 5 minutes from the wasteland.
We yeah. complained that it wasn't long enough.
Yeah. To like get there. Yeah. Anyways, that is a hilarious statistic, but not atypical. You find that a lot,
right.
Actually. What is this? I saw a number today that was like 80% of people don't finish anything.
Yeah,
like,
I know what
you're 80% of games that people purchase they don't finish.
Yeah.
So, not that surprising. But yeah.
Maybe games should just be better.
And on that note,
Battlefront.
That's going to wrap things up for this week. This has been Procedurally Generated. We hope you've enjoyed listening to the show, and please be sure to check us out on Audioboom and iTunes to leave a rating or review, tell us how much we suck, or just correct us on something, and we will mention it. You can also follow us on Twitter at @PG_show. Feel free to make some comments, and we'll talk back and forth with you guys. Thanks, and as always, game on.